You're listening to the WP Tonic, WordPress and Tech, focused on building a successful business in WordPress aimed at the WordPress professional and power user. Join Jonathan Denwood and Kurt Von Annen as your host and co-host as we bring you great discussions from around the globe.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show this week in WordPress and SaaS. In this episode, we've got a returning friend of the show. We've got Rob Rowling in the house. He is one of the founders of Tiny Seeds that invests in bootstrap startups. He's also the host of the very popular Startups for the Rest of Us, which I listen, I wouldn't say every week, but almost every week. Sorry, Rob, I've disappointed so many. It should be a great show. So, Rob, would you like to give a quick 20-30 second intro to the new listeners and viewers?
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Jonathan. Nice to see you again, Kurt. I used to be a software developer. I became an entrepreneur. I bootstrapped 5 companies, and a couple of them were successful. So I sold my last one in 2016, and then I started Tiny Seed, the fund that invests in bootstrap SaaS founders. I also write books. My most recent book is called The SaaS Playbook, and you can get on Amazon or saasplaybook.com if you're interested in SaaS. And my 5th book that I co-wrote with my wife comes out in 2 months. Well, we do a Kickstarter in a couple of months, and that one's about, it's called Exit Strategy. It's about selling companies, the mental side of that.
And I've got my ever-patient co-host who deals with my badness with such ease. Rob knows I'm bonkers. But I'm bonkers in a nice way, Rob, but, you know, I'm a bit all over the place. But what's unusual with people that try and run their own businesses? So, Kurt, would you like to introduce yourself to the new listeners and viewers?
Absolutely. My name is Kurt Von Annen. I own an agency called Manana No Mas. Our agency focuses largely on membership and learning websites, and I work directly with the good folks at WP Tonic and that team, and Lifter LMS.
Like I say, with some of the subjects, we're going to be talking about the best type of sections for B2B bootstrap, enterprise, midsize, or MGOs. We're going to be talking about AI and SEO. We're going to be talking about free trials or paid trials. Got a load of great subjects. We will be back in a few moments, folks. I've got some messages from our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers just like you sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
We're coming back. I want to point out we've got a new sponsor for a couple of weeks. We've got MotorPress. MotorPress is a WordPress appointment booking and WordPress-based plugin for booking for consultants, for small businesses. It looks really feature-rich. It looks a great possible choice. You will find this plus other special deals from the major sponsors, plus a curated list of the best WordPress plugins and services for the WordPress professional and power user. You can get all this by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals, wp-tonic.com/deals. What more could you ask for, my beloved WordPress professionals? Probably a lot more, but that's all you're going to get from that page. I'm sorry to disappoint. I've made a career of it. Rob, let's go straight into it. So I was listening to your episode, 9 Things to Learn Investing in 170 SaaS Companies. I think the number one thing you really emphasized this concept of vertical against horizontal when it comes to a bootstrap startup. And, you know, obviously you've been thinking a bit about this. Have you had any additional thoughts after this particular episode? And maybe you could also initially explain what you think the concept is.
Yeah, sure. The concept, for those who are not familiar, this is specifically with SaaS companies. I've invested it total 191, but with a tiny seed, it's been 171 over 5 years. And so you just start to see patterns of success, of failure, of anti-patterns and all that. The thing that we have noticed and we're seeing in the numbers and with headwinds and tailwinds, frankly, are that vertical SaaS tends to be easier for bootstrappers. It tends to be easier to get a foothold in a market. And so for those who don't know, a horizontal SaaS is something like Calendly or Slack. Any business in the world can use those tools. A verticalized version of those would be like Calendly for realtors, Calendly for mortgage brokers, Calendly for even like salespeople, right? Salespeople's not technically an industry, but you get the idea. It's when you niche down. And there's this other term that I've coined over the past few months called orthogonal. And because what we noticed is there's horizontal, there's vertical, but within horizontal, we have this group that is, I'll say, just growing faster, getting more traction, easier to move. Those folks are horizontal that target a specific job title or role at a company. So imagine an applicant tracking system like Jazz HR. That's a horizontal SaaS. Any company in the world, it's not, you know, can use it. It's not based on a specific niche vertical, but it targets what head of HR, HR buyer, HR, you know, people ops. There's a role, and those, since they know who their buyer is, they operate or they seem to be behaving more similarly to vertical. So vertical and orthogonal. I'm not saying across the board you should only do, you know, it's not an always never thing, but it is a pattern that we are absolutely seeing. And we recently had an exit. Gymdesk, which he sold a majority stake in his company, not even all his shares, for $32.5 million. And he was bootstrapped. He was doing $40,000 a month when he got into Tiny Seed 3.5 years ago. And he just had it's not even life-changing money. It's like generational wealth. And he has another bite at the apple with his private equity growth company. He's a vertical SaaS. It is SaaS for gyms, and it's the entire operating system, you know, to run a gym. So that's the hypothesis. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to ask the obvious question because, you know, I think you covered it yourself. You know, your last exit was horizontal, wasn't it? You know, with Drip. But on the other hand, you were on your fifth startup. Do you think that was the major that's made it possible for you to have a success with that because you had all that experience?
It's a couple things. So we were horizontal. However, we could work for any vertical, but I focused on three verticals. So all of our marketing, our sales, the features we built, I only listened to three. It was SaaS founders, it was bloggers and creators, and it was agencies who were building this. And we originally did four. WordPress was actually the fourth when we first launched, and we just found it wasn't the best fit. They were more price sensitive, whatever. There were just reasons, right? And so we eventually cut that off and we just focused on those three. And so I would say our tool was able to be used vertically or horizontally, but we actually did focus. The interesting thing was after we sold, it was actually during the sale process, they asked, what's your breakdown of customers by type? And when we went through it, 15% of our customers were e-commerce. And I had no reach into e-com. I had never marketed or sold or anything to e-com. And for some reason, they were using it. So that became an interesting thing. Actually, they did pivot. They, being the acquirer, did pivot Drip later into being an e-commerce tool.
The other thing I got from this episode is you talk about what's the optimal amount of founders. Is it one, two, or three? I think you said that in one particular possible investment that didn't go through, you had almost six founders.
Yeah, we did
invest
in that one. They applied.
I would have thought two is the optimum myself, but the only problem is if those two founders have a disagreement, not a total where it gets really nasty, but they're having you know, how do they deal with it on this when there's a 50-50 split where they deal with it, but they've got an honest business disagreement, which they can't really agree. How do they deal with it where it doesn't lead to a promising company just collapsing?
Usually they come to me and they ask my opinion, and that's the deciding vote. You know, they don't have to, but they come to an advisor or an investor or a mentor or someone, some unbiased third party. And the best time is, best thing is when they come and pitch an idea of like, one of us is really pro this and one is against, but we're not going to tell you who. And so, and sometimes they don't even say that. They'll just like, here's this thing, what do you think? And I'll weigh in. And A&R will too. He's my co-founder. And, you know, we have other mentors and such that can weigh in. But that's often what happens. What you're pointing out, Jonathan, is it's a conundrum slash paradox of having a second founder makes your life a lot easier. And especially if they're complementary, you know, 1 + 1 = 5. However, at the same time, 1 + 1 can also equal the business imploding because the two of you can't get along because one of you, it's like a marriage. When you get divorced, the business is done usually. And so we see both of these things happening. We have seen, in fact, of the companies, Tiny C, let's see, we invested in 171, 6% of our companies are no longer operating, 4% have sold, and 2% have shut down. And I believe of several that have shut down, co-founder disputes was probably the number one reason. Well, co-founder disputes are lack of traction and running out of money. So it's a big problem.
Right. Over to you, Kurt.
Well, I took an awful lot away in this episode from a couple of standpoints. One was, you know, your percentages of who becomes a millionaire, because I love the idea of playing the lotto, even though I don't play the lotto, right? So it's like, wow, if I was friends with Rob and part of Tiny Seed, I'd have this percentage of being a millionaire. It's like, that's pretty cool. But when I thought more about the horizontal versus vertical, I'm not going to lie, I'll be transparent. It was a struggle to figure out that phrase, the riches are in the niches, because I've had projects where, and Jonathan knows the background on this, where in power sports, I have a product where I may have niched down too far. Like, I've niched down so far to a specific audience, and the audience I'm helping isn't even the audience that's swiping the credit card. That's three layers up. Mm-hmm. And so I found myself having to kind of back out of that niche a little bit and go, okay, I got to pull in some, I got to make it a wider berth. But the other way has just really paid off for me, Rob. And I'm going to give you the credit. It's kind of the inspiration. You know, I run my agency as an agency, but it feels like a startup. It feels like a SaaS thing, right? There's a lot of applicable things. And in my e-learning segment, I said, you know what? I'm going to focus on SCORM for a while because no one else is focusing on SCORM, and I know how SCORM works. So I'll help people save money and put SCORM in WordPress. And we've got 3 new clients in the last week just from being very focused. Like, this is, I'm still, the broad e-learning thing is still part of our agency, but if we focus on SCORM as a subset, we seem to get more leads, more clients. And so I can very much see how applying that horizontal versus vertical thought pattern can work. But I also heard in one of your episodes about having a goal and shrinking the time to make a decision. You know, when you try something like a new niche or a new pattern, or when you guys look at making an investment with Tiny Seed, is it a, let's see what this looks like on a 30, 60, 90 day pattern? Or do you say, hey, let's take a look at this next Christmas and see what it looks like? Like, how do you effectively draw a timeline to evaluate a goal or the pathway to a goal?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it depends on what we are rolling out. So I'll use a couple examples. With, you referenced like leaning into a marketing effort. So with MicroConf, we're looking at doubling down on LinkedIn. Probably starting next month or November is where I'm going to record it. But yeah, I just have no presence there. And so it's like, let's try it, right? YouTube worked really well for us until it's plateaued now. Podcast grows slowly. Like, we have time, we have budget. Where are we going to invest that? And so I think it's going to be LinkedIn. So the question is, well, the first question is, how'd you get to that? And we could talk all about that process of like deciding, why is it LinkedIn rather than Snapchat or TikTok or, you know, whatever. And there's reasons. But now that we're going to do it, how long will I do it without seeing results is the question. And for me, I want to see some type of uptick within 60 days. If there's like, if I'm flat, if today I get 1500 views a week or something, you know, of these videos that I throw up, not having any idea what I'm doing. If we're still at 1560 days, I'm going to probably pull a ripcord. I will have made changes along that way, but it will be, if I'm out of ideas, I'm out of ideas. Or I'll bring in a consultant. Now, in this case, we're actually going to have a consultant from day one, so I expect it to work. So it's tight time, 60 to 90. Now, when we invest in tiny seed companies, it's like, you got 5 to 10 years, you know, and we're not going to know. I say we're not going to know. We see the progress along the way, but also we've had some companies where we invest and they're just plugging along. We invest at 10K MRR. And it's like a year later, they're at 15 or 20. And we're like, well, I guess this one, you know, maybe isn't going to work. And then suddenly they figure something out and they bootstrap their hockey stick. And then they're at a million a year later. It is shocking the variability to some of these things.
I'm going to ask you a question based on this first question here with the 170 companies. How many people do you think, percentage-wise, that you sit with for a potential investment and you think to yourself, they're just ahead of the market? Like, they saw the problem so far in advance, they don't have a real customer base to market to. Like, that market hasn't realized their pain point yet, so they're not a real client yet.
That's interesting. Not many. And the reason is because we tend to talk to face-to-face, Zoom. If they make it to that point, they have decent traction. And so if they're ahead of it, they would struggle to get to that point. So it's kind of self-fulfilling. I think the question may be better phrased as like, of all applicants, you know, of all the, we get 500, 600 applicants, however many we get, like what percentage of those are ahead of the market? And that, I have no idea. Because if I go down and see a bunch of companies at zero or $100 or 300 MRR, like, I don't know. I don't think long enough about, oh, are they ahead of the market? You know, it's just it hasn't been a data point that I've thought.
Yeah.
About.
Yeah. Okay. Jonathan?
Yeah, thanks. In your episode, 7 Key Takeaways in 2024, The State of Independence, I think one of the main parts of that particular episode was the ever-going discussion between free trials and paid trials and when you should take the credit card details at the beginning or at the end of the trial. And I think the other thing that you discussed in that episode was the best kind of target for a B2B startup. Is it enterprise, mid-size? Or you were surprised a lot of them are going for MGOs. You got any additional thoughts about, would you agree they were the two main elements of that particular episode?
Yeah, there's always, I think the three founder companies performing best was also curious.
Yes.
That goes against my intuition, to be honest. Usually it's one or two, and I think that's a great number of bootstrappers. Three, I'm always like, one of you is probably a weaker link, maybe. I don't want to say this too strong because we have tiny seed companies with three founders, and I'm not subtweeting them right now. But so I thought that was an interesting thing, and it was just data. It was like, companies with three founders tend to grow faster than companies with one or two. But yeah, there's always the debate in the conversation for what, 15 years now of free trial with credit card, free trial without. Should you use freemium? Usually not. And then, yeah. So I guess here's what I'll say. If I were launching a SaaS today, I would give thought to, does my end user, the person who wants to use the SaaS, want to use my product, who's going to get value out of it, do I expect them to have a credit card, you know, a business card? And if it's a developer at a big company, then they probably won't. There are exceptions, but they probably won't. So then I would say, all right, so how do I let them get into a trial without a credit card and then do it later? This is in the early stage when I'm first launching. Now, once you get to the point where you know your ideal customer profile, you can make this decision more easily because you start to see patterns of like, oh, 80% of them do have credit cards. Therefore, I am going to ask for credit card upfront because I only want qualified people in my funnel. Now, why only qualified people? Well, because it reduces the number of conversations you need to have, the support, the whatever else. On the flip side, if I had a product where the support was not high and where I did just want to widen the funnel, like Craig Hewitt did with Castos, he removed credit card upfront. And doubled or tripled the number of leads basically in his funnel. So would I do that ultimately? Probably. That's probably what I would try to get to. I would try to get to the point of lower friction in my trial. But I tend to be kind of tentative, especially at the start when I'm launching something new and it's like, ooh, not product market fit. I don't really want a bunch of freebies in here poking around, confusing me. Who do I listen to? If everyone's in with no credit card, like who do I listen to? At least if people have a credit card, it's like, oh, there's like some buy-in and I can, you know, hopefully use that as a filter. So it's a nuanced topic, obviously. No hard and fast rule, but I have a general framework of, you know, what I would do.
Yeah, that's another really great area because I remember, I can't remember the lady's name, but you had a successful founder that I think has taken investment from Tiny Seed, and she did thousands of direct messaging. I think you mentioned her in this particular show. I apologize not remembering her name, but Alan. I did listen to the... Sorry.
Yeah, it was Marie from Tally. She hasn't taken Tiny Seed funding, but she has built a pretty incredible, like a $1.5 million business.
Yeah, I remember the episode because I think I might be deluded, but maybe Kurt would agree. I'm a pretty determined individual, but she showed a level of focus and determination that impressed me enormously. I think she impressed you as well, didn't she?
Oh, yeah. To build a... It was just her and her partner, and they built it to one point... when I recorded that, it was 1.3 million, and they're growing like crazy with like one support person. It was like no staff. It's like, how did you do this? You know, and they did it with free, and they had freemium. They're just tally.so, they're a form builder. So they've used freemium, and she sent out thousands of DMs, you know, per your point, to get people, because you still have to market freemium, right? Freemium doesn't just market itself. And in a very crowded space where we know there's Typeform and Jotform and every other noun dot form, she started Tally.so and has traction. It's an incredible bootstrap business. She's actually speaking at MicroComp Europe here in about a month because I want to hear more of her story.
Yeah, it was a quite... I think that's another great point, because especially big in the WordPress space, that this idea that freedom will market itself, and it doesn't, does it? You know, having a free product, I think you still got to drive it, even if you're offering it for free, haven't you?
That's right. Yeah, it's just like engineering is marketing. You know, this thing, the idea of, I have a core tool I want to sell, and I'm going to engineer as market, meaning I'm going to go build this free tool that people can use, and that's going to market my main product. It's like, great, now you have two products to market. That is what it is. You can't just engineer your way out of it. Same thing. The reason, like, someone might say, a WordPress developer, well, I need the free version to be in the WordPress repo, right? WordPress.org plugin repo. And it's like, yeah, that's true. You do. That, it's not... It doesn't work because it's free. It works because the repo has a bunch of search traffic. It's a search engine that people come to solve a problem. And so, yeah, if I were in WordPress, would I have a free version of my plugin? Absolutely. That's just the default in the space. And then I would have paid add-ons, right? That tends to be, whether they're subscription or one time or annual, that tends to be the approach
there. Right, fantastic. I think it's a good spot for us to go for our mid-break. It's been a fascinating discussion. We've got some great stuff to talk about in the second half. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convessio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convessio at convessio.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. I want to point out, if you're looking for a great WordPress partner, if you're a single freelancer or you're somebody who's a power user and you're looking to build a membership or community-focused website, why don't you look at becoming a partner with WP Tonic? To find more about our partner scheme, all you have to do is go over to wp-tonic.com/partners, wp-tonic.com/partners, and we'd love to work with you. Over to you, Kurt.
Well, it's kind of an extension of the freemium question from my standpoint, Rob, and that is, and you kind of mentioned it talking about this Tally thing. He said she'd gotten to this growth, you know, with one person in support. I think if I were to think of any one main core reason that I am not a product person is because I panic. I think if I made a product, I'd live in ever panic of having to support it. The amount of questions, and I don't want to say misuse, but you know, everybody wants to customize or tweak something or connect an API to something and automate something. And you're going, that's not even why I built this product. Right. But now it's become this burden on your shoulders because someone's bringing it to you. When you are looking at a freemium experience, and I heard you talk about this in a couple of your shows, but understanding what part you give away for free and how you support it seems to be one of the biggest cogs in the machine. So is it, at what point do you think someone needs to have a person behind support over an AI chat bot or over a Facebook community group that supports each other? Like, at what point do you think an actual support interactive person needs to come into play?
Well, I think when someone's paying for something, I want to support it. That's it. If they're not paying for it, if it was a completely free WordPress plugin, it's like, hey, it's community, it's open source. You have a problem, talk with your commit. You know, and that's the thing that I think I want to point out to your first kind of segment of that, Kurt, where you said, you know, I don't know if I could be a product person because what if they ask for this and everybody wants to do everything. You get good at elegantly and tactfully saying no. You say no a lot, and especially the more and more people that use it, and you learn to say who to say no to and what to say no about. And you just have to get good at that if you are going to be a product person. You know, I didn't start that way. I was terrified the first time I got to build everything, everyone. They say, listen to your customers. So I'm going to build everything, everybody. But that's not what you want to do. You want to learn who to say no to and who to say yes to, right? And there's a bit of founder gut and there's a filter there. Sometimes there's market pull where a whole group of people are like, no, build this thing and we'll pay 10 times more. And then you're like, you know, I got to dig in. The thing with freemium, to like tie freemium in with support specifically, as you brought it up, is you shouldn't do freemium if your product is hard to support, if it requires a lot of support, if it is hard to get onboarded, if there is an incremental cost to each person using it, if there's no virality. You know, there are like four components to where I say, if you have all four of these, then consider freemium. Still not saying do it. But if you don't have all four of those, don't do freemium. So with Drip, for example, as my last startup, it was marketing automation, quite complicated. You build these big visual workflows. You could do all kinds of stuff. It was almost a Turing complete language with if then else is, you know, built into the thing. Well, I didn't do freemium. The acquirers did freemium after we got acquired and it didn't work. They shut it down, you know? But so to your point, it's like you should know if you're getting into freemium what you're doing. And for me, and I kind of steal these criteria from Ruben Gomez, he's a founder of Signwell, but if you have high support or if there's a lot of support required, just don't do freemium. Unless if you're Dropbox, if you're Slack, if you're Evernote, if you know who else we can name, who has a free plan, great. If you're a public company, you have hundreds of millions in the bank, then go do that. But if you're bootstrapping or mostly bootstrapping, like most of us are, you know, only 5% probably bootstrappers should use freemium. It's a very small number.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Jonathan.
So in the episode which I think you had with the founder of Signwell, I think the episode I'm talking about is where you. Talking about SEO, the age of AI, branding and brand becoming important. One area where I don't agree with you, well, that's probably a bit strong, because I think I could see where you're coming from, but I think you've moved to your own view is around branding, because what I took from that conversation and your views around branding is there's a, especially people that are used to working with large organizations, they buy a kind of branding pack where they're sold a logo for $10,000 or and a branding pack, and they haven't even got their first customer. But I think in early episodes, you were extremely a bit negative about branding and that it doesn't really produce any results. But I think you now have changed your position. Am I putting words in your mouth, or maybe you can explain your thoughts around branding? Because I think they've changed a bit.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I am definitely a person who, when I get new data or new information, I will change my viewpoints over time. Like, I have no shame about this. I'm not running for president. So, you know what I mean? It's like, if it's the right choice now, maybe it changed. Maybe the world changed over the last 10.
That's much too sophisticated for American politics, exactly. Isn't it? That's much too sophisticated philosophy, isn't it?
Totally. So yeah, that was episode 725, and you know, the podcast has been going for 14 years, and so I have changed a lot of opinions over the years. And this one I have because when we first started the podcast, and especially from, like, let's say 2005 to about 20, when was it? It was probably 2014, maybe it's 2013, 14. All of my businesses were basically direct response. This is a tool, you pay for the tool, and the logo is me typing something out, the name of the website out in a font, and putting it in a place and then picking a color. That was it. The tool and the marketing and the copy sells it, and it's utility and you stick around for it. No brand, didn't care. And it all worked for me, right? Then, so back then I would have been like, you don't need a brand, especially if you're bootstrapping small niches, blah, blah, blah. Then as I built MicroConf, as I started writing books and my name, Rob Wallen, it is a brand, right? It is a personal brand that people recognize. As I built Drip and that became a brand, I didn't focus on making them brands. I focused on making them the best products that I could. I wanted Drip to be really successful. I wanted my books to be amazing. I wanted to say smart things that help people. I wanted to build MicroConf, which is a conference series I run, into an amazing thing. So I didn't focus on brand up front. Brand happened. Brand happened on its own. Brand is what people say about you or your product when you're not in the room, right? That's like my shorthand for it. Brand is, visual design is part of brand positioning, it's a bunch of stuff. But realistically, as I started building brands, and now I realize if I say, in certain circles, if I say MicroConf, Tiny Seed, Startups for the Rest of Us, Rob Walling, SaaS Playbook, each of those things evokes something of maybe some people think that guy's an asshole. Maybe that's part of my brand, you know, but, or maybe other people think really good information or trustworthy. Someone who shows up and ships and has my back, so to speak, and someone I like and I trust and is knowledgeable. You know what I mean? That's like part of brand, right? So as I built those, I realized the power now. Then everything I launch from here on till I'm all done, it has the luxury of being part of my brand. When we launched Tiny Seed 5 years ago, already it had a little bit of a shine on it because people were like, oh, that's Rob Walling's thing. Well, why do they know that? Well, because Rob Walling has a brand now. So that's where it's not, both can exist. If I'm doing direct response and I want to build a 10K, 20K, 30K a month lifestyle business, totally, you can do that. Don't worry about brand. You can also build brands over time. The thing that I still don't like is what you said, Jonathan, which is I see bootstrappers saying, well, I'm going to build this tool for this niche. And to do it, I'm going to start a media brand. I'm going to start a YouTube channel and a podcast. And I'm going to I'm going to start a conference series. And it's like, you're going to do that to sell a SaaS company? You're going to build an audience? Like, don't. Like, that's not a good idea. It's such a waste of your time. First, get customers, build a great business. The brand will evolve. And you can.
Well, I think you might, I understand, but that might be linked to the other topics that we're going to discuss. Because cool. I think you're going to, I totally understand where you're coming from, but I think also that might be changing a little bit. Because I think the difference between, and I think you're an example of it in some ways, but in some ways you could push back, is that you are a kind of personal brand. Rob Rowling has become a brand. But Drip was definitely, you know, you had a podcast where you, the two founders of Drip, where you used to have a weekly discussion about how you were freaking out with the pressure, the ever-mounting pressure of getting this thing launched and being this and driving it, which I learned a lot from, but I also thought you were crazy to do it. Can you see? But that was part of a personal brand building at the same time you were building a SaaS, wasn't you?
Yeah, it didn't help it didn't help Trip.
Like, no, it didn't help Trip, did it?
It didn't grow the company. I'm not saying it hurt it. It just didn't, you know, that's the type of stuff I see some founders say. Well, like, I'm building the brand because I'm telling the story of it. And it's like, how about get customers some other way? Because I was doing SEO, cold outreach, going to events, doing partnerships. You know, I was doing a bunch of marketing that actually closes. The podcast you're talking about with Derek and I, we were recording that over the course of like a year. And then we put it out at all at once in a big chunk. It's at startupstoriespodcast.com if you want to hear it. And it's agonizing for me now to listen to. It's like 90 minutes of us just like, we don't have product market fit. We're bleeding customers out. Like, it's the early days of every startup. And it turns out it worked for us, but it might not have, you know? But yeah, that didn't. And did that help build my personal brand? Yep, sure. You know, it kept people, me top of mind. But did it help the company or did it help the product? No. And that's the thing I want to caution founders against is you being an influencer is usually not going to help you sell your software. It might help.
Well, what about if the podcast is targeted at the audience of your SaaS or your product, or your YouTube channel is what I call educational marketing? Do you think that works better?
It can. The question I always ask is that the best marketing approach to do next? That's it. And of all the tiny seed companies, 171 investments, somewhere less than 5% have any type of audience and have ever had any type of audience. And yet we have Jim Desk selling, you know, a portion of his equity for $32.5 million, right? With zero audience. And so the vast majority of the B2B SaaS companies that I see don't build an audience. They don't build a media brand. They do build a strong brand with their customers. Their customers start to have affinity to it. And frankly, if I'm honest, if I started a SaaS tomorrow, of course, I would have a YouTube channel and a podcast because that's what I do. That's what I love, right? But don't kid yourself that that's the best use of your time. SEO, cold outreach, content, good partnerships are probably, you just don't want to do them. You know, and I don't mean you, Jonathan. I just mean the developer listening to this right now. You know, they don't want to do the grind, which is marketing and sales. Some folks want to be an influencer, and it's like, I can't really help you.
Well, I do a bit of everything, but I learned my lesson and. I think Kirk knows how much effort I put in SEO, do you?
Yeah.
And you could, but SEO, you know, one of your first companies that were you successfully sold?
I did, yeah. Six-figure exit for that one.
It was based on it. It was an SEO tool. You know the market. It was a popular SEO tool. Is it actually still going?
No, it got shut down a couple years ago. So they bought it for me in like 2015, if I recall. As Drip was taking off, I was like, it's called Hittail. And I was like, I can't run two companies. I can't try to grow both companies. So I sold it. And I got a good price for it. It was a nice chunk of money. But yeah, they shut it down a couple years ago. I went to the domain. I was like, oh, sad.
Good. So how, you know, you covered this in this particular episode, AI and SEO. And, you know, you talked about, I hope you're impressed that I've obviously listened to all your episodes.
You really have. This is great.
I told Kirk that he had to listen to them all. I don't know if he doesn't listen to anybody I say anyway half the time. And I don't blame him, actually, because he would drive you crazy listening to me all the time. Obviously, Google's got a bit of a problem, but I think the fundamental, I don't think anybody really understands how all this is going to work out anyway, do they? Because I think there's all different types of searches and people are on kind of different paths of their searches because, you know, there are, you know, so it's all up in the air. What's your own thoughts? Have you had time to think about this? Because it's rather important. Because if
it is,
because it's a fundamental, am I correct in staying in your early days, it was the fundamental thing that you really dug in and learned and you utilized to try and build up your own success, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah, I never really got it working with drip that well because the market was so crowded, but it was every product I owned before that, basically SEO, AdWords, display ads. I don't know, there were some others, but that those were the big channels. Yeah, no one knows. You're right. And I don't even think they know within Google what this is going to look like. And what if I had a business that was heavily based on SEO, I would not panic, but I would definitely be mindful and concerned about it. Here's the thing. If you listen to that episode 725, where I talk about it with Ruben Gomez, his business has a tremendous SEO funnel for Signwell, which is a competitor. Well, it's electronic signature, right? It's like DocuSign, HelloSign, but Signwell is a great tool. Tons of SEO traffic. So when I ask him, are you concerned? Like, are you just going to see a trickle off? He says, we've already been seeing that for years because of the no-click Google results, because of the fact that above the fold, even on a huge monitor, it's all ads, right? So he's like,
they've done their best to destroy it anyway, but you think, what else are you going to do apart from paid advertising?
Exactly. So a big thing that he says in there, one of the key takeaways, it's only like a sentence or two. He says, you know, the old approach, because the approach I used to do 10, 15 years ago was to write a blog post, publish it with keywords in it, build some links. Hey, look, I rank. He's basically like, that's just going to work less and less and less. And AI will answer all those questions better than your blog post. So what do you do? Well, what are the things people are searching for that are not blog posts these days? You look for tools. You look for video sometimes. You look for, tools is a big one. There's a bunch of stuff that's not written. Sometimes you look for audio, a bunch of stuff that's not written content. And so that's the SEO play. I think that doesn't go away. AI can't. If I want to convert, I don't know, do something complicated. I want to electronically sign a document. And I go to AI and say, how do I electronically sign a document? It's not going to do that for me. It's not going to give me a paragraph of information that electronically signs my document. It's going to say, there are four or five, you know, tools, blah, blah, blah. Go. And so for those things, there's still room. But yeah, it's going to change in a big way. And, you know, I'd say the majority, like more than 50% of tiny seed companies are companies that I'm invested in. SEO is a major part of their marketing. So I'm really aware of this and thinking about it.
I'll give you, before I throw it over to Kurt, I'll give you a little something that hopefully you can comment on. I've had the same podcasting equipment for almost 7 years. I utilize a USB mic, a Technic mic that I bought for $70, and I use StreamYard and it's worked. But recently I've been having some, my sound today I presume has been okay, but I had a really great friend of the show, Matt Medeus, who's well known in the WordPress space, but he's also one of these audio Nazis, Rob. So he said, your volume's not high enough. So I bought a new a non-USB mic, which has come, and I've bought a separate sound deck. So I started doing research, Rob, trying utilizing search, I've hit this site. Is it pain placement or is this a real review? Then I go to YouTube and have to waste 4 hours looking at YouTube videos, yep. Right? Spending most of my Saturday researching. I'm not looking to become a professional artist. I just want the quality of my sound. So when I get Matt Medeus back on the show, the sound Nazi, that I'm not flux and spend the next 10 minutes trying to adjust my sound, you know. But I think trying to find out a product, trying to find out the right service, I think it's even got worse than a couple of years ago. What's your insights about that?
Marketers ruin everything. That's my insight. Marketers ruin everything. Marketers, the more marketers who learned SEO, learned that they could make build more links and send more traffic to their thing they're selling, or, well, I'll just be an affiliate marketer. And, you know, as you're saying, a bunch of these review sites, top 10, blah, it's whatever the number one is, the one that pays them the most commission. Like, it's just agonizing, right? So yes, to your point, I did the same. Number one, anyone listening to this, unless you want to be an audio pro, just get a USB mic. Like, they go to Craig Hewitt's channel or Castos channel, and they have a USB mic. Mine's an ATR 2100X, and I love this thing. I switched away, same thing, to an XLR. It's been a struggle, and I kind of regret it. I spent $700 on
Amazon. Thanks for that. I haven't spent that. I've got your money, Rob. So.
Yeah. And so this is the one Kurt's using, and if I could go back to this, I would consider it. But here I am on an SM7B, which is, you know, what Joe Rogan uses and other people, and I'm like, well, obviously this makes me sound better incrementally. You know how I picked this mic? I went to a trusted source. Speaking of brand earlier, I didn't go to Google, type in best podcasting mic. I didn't want to hear all that noise. I went to the Castos blog post because I trust Castos is not bullshitting me, because Castos is a podcast company and I'm an investor in them. Tiny Seed is. That's not why I went there. They didn't make money because I bought from their recommendation. It's just that I trust that they weren't making a recommendation based on money. And so that is an interesting point of what's changing, Jonathan, is... So if SEO is...
Well, the reason I'm bringing this up, you know, Google's trying to deal with this. Well, it's got nothing to do with AI. It's got to do with paid placement on Google, in everywhere. You know, the boundaries between how money, sponsorship, whatever that sponsorship is, affects what people are saying, doesn't it? And the way they deal it is... They read it, you know, every term you do, a competitive term, they've got Reddit on top of search. But if you know anything about Reddit, I won't believe anything anybody says on Reddit, because there's some of the, it's a cesspool at best, Reddit. And they've got some of the worst advice I've ever received from that bloody site. So anybody... It just amuses me. But, you know, am I being cruel about Reddit?
Well, I think so. Depends on the subreddit. So when I search for anything about playing any of my hobbies, playing the guitar, Dungeons and Dragons, comic book collecting, those subreddits are great. They're great. And the people who are jerks get downvoted, and the advice at the top. I mean, when I'm dungeon mastering, when I'm DMing a game and I need rules, like a clarification, and I'm like, I don't know how this rule works, I go to Google, and if there's a Reddit post at the top, I'm like, amazing. Someone has the same question. Five people answer, always get the answer. So I think it depends on the subreddit. I think the general Reddit is pretty rough.
Got it. Over to you, Kurt.
And just like that, this podcast.
Oh, God, yes. You need to turn your volume down. You're blowing me away.
And just like that, this podcast will be shared on Twitch and Discord, because he mentioned Dungeons and Dragons. Not only do I listen to your stuff, Rob, I want to set the record straight. I have even downloaded the Entrepreneur's Guide to Keeping Our Shit Together by Sherry. So I'm a fan of the whole family. I just want to set it straight. If we could jump into question four and talking about burnout and the updates on your progress, I'd love to get there. I'm kind of interested. I'm going to mix something else into the question, and that is, you have your new course coming out. Is your new course coming out kind of like a tool to edge against future burnout? Like I'm almost thinking, like, if I create this evergreen product, right, along like with books and all the other stuff that you do, is this going to edge against future input and help release some of this potential cause of burnout?
Say again, the course specifically.
What was that?
Say that the last part again. Are you talking about the course helping against burnout?
Yeah, that's kind of where my head was at. Because I saw that you were releasing this course. And I was like, he's already got books. He's already got MicroConf. He's already got all this stuff. And I'm like, and so at the end of all this, so me and Jonathan, we're used to dealing with people coming to market with a course first. Like, I'm going to make a course and I'm going to become a millionaire. And it's like, I don't think that works. And then you are coming to the table and saying, you know, I've already made a mark. I've already published some successful books. I've already got MicroComps and Tiny Seed. And now I'm coming out with a course. And in my mind, again, thinking about this episode about burnout, I was like, that's a great tool for somebody that's climbed this ladder to kind of edge off some input, right?
Yeah.
Put out the course, and so now you can say, oh, that's great. I'd love to talk to you for 6 hours about that, but I have a course for that.
Of course. Oh, that's such a good point. I hadn't thought about it. I'll tell you the reason why a course. I haven't done a course in 14 years. I did one back in 2009, actually, 2010. There's just ridiculous amount of work, and they're brutal, absolutely brutal. Especially this is 10 hours of video content that was like, I mean, we probably spent 100, 200 editor hours on it. It's highly, highly produced because that's what I want to put out today, right? I want my brand to look like that. The reason we put the course out, it's for early stage folks. It's like coming up with SaaS ideas, it's vetting them, it's building an MVP, it's building a launch list, it's launching. And I just get that question so much. It's exactly that of like, I wrote it as a book and I didn't publish the book because I was like, you know, people are going to read this and not to actually take action. And it's just not, it wasn't meaty enough. I couldn't get into the weeds. And in this course, I get way deep into the weeds. And then we have quizzes and worksheets and there's a community people can be part of, right? And so I feel like you don't just need information at that stage. There's a little bit of motivation, accountability. And that was where it was like, let's do a course for this and like really try to actually help people get started. Now, might I turn this into a book a year or two down the line because all the content's there? I might. I'm going to see how it goes. But right now, it is the definitive. Anyone has a question for me about how to get started, I'm going to be like, yeah, I'll tell you on a podcast or whatever, but that's it. That's it. That's the knowledge. You know, it's all in there. And I really wanted to, when we started, it was like, we were going to do 15, 16 videos and it was going to be like 5 hours. It's 28 videos and it's 10 hours, you know, 9.5 hours, because we just kept saying, you know what? Let's cover that. You know what? Let's cover that. Let's cover that topic and let's cover, and then let's interview Derek Reimer about building an MVP and Ruben about SEO. And, you know, it was the next thing and the next thing. So yeah, I don't know that it was to hedge my burnout because I'm not burned out on talking about this stuff. It really was, there's just a market need for something, for a high quality course like this. And I don't know of another one that exists.
Nice. On a more personal question for people that haven't read the books or listened to all the podcasts, as your, let's call it status, as your status has grown, have you found the potential for burnout to increase, or do you feel like it was harder at the beginning?
I think it was harder at the beginning, but here's the thing. It's not about status or reach. It's about resources. It's that I bootstrapped 5 companies and I raised funding for the 6th. We've raised $42 million for Tiny Seed. That's not, doesn't go in our bank account. It's to invest in startups. But we get management fees off those. It's the first funded company I ever had as a multi-million dollar budget, you know, each year out of management fees. I've never had that before. It turns out when you have a bunch of money in your bank account and you can hire super senior, highly capable people to do all the stuff that you, that they're really good at, it's their zone of genius that you're not, suddenly you get to do exactly what you want every day and really enjoy it. And so that's my life now. So I don't burn out because I love, this is the best job I've ever had. It's not because the status is, I would say all, it may be relevant a little bit of like, things are easier because I'm me, you know, things are easier because people respond to my email. But realistically, the reason I'm not burning out is because we just have money to hire people to do all this shit that I used to do and I didn't enjoy it. Because that's what burnout is, right? It's like, yeah, doing stuff for a long time that you don't want to do or doing too much of it.
Yeah. Now I got one more question out of curiosity, and then I probably have to go run this live for Lifter LMS. But just out of curiosity, what platform did you choose to put your course on?
We used Circle.so. And the reason is that there's a chance, good chance we're leaving Slack. MicroConf pays $80,000. They want to charge us $130,000 this year for our MicroConf Connect. We made slightly more of that with our subscriptions to that community and not a lot more. And so we negotiated them down to like $80,000. And it's like, they're untenable. Salesforce, since they acquired them, is just ridiculous. So what we said is, what's a replacement for Slack? Well, there is none. We know that, but what's the next best thing? We started looking at Circle. So then we said, well, let's give Circle a try for this course because they can do courses and community and a bunch of other stuff.
Cool.
So that's where we are. It's going well so far.
Sounds like it might be a future episode on the Membership Machine Show then.
I'd be happy to join a advisor, my GM.
Well, but there's no chance of persuading you to look at WordPress. You don't like it, do you? No.
BobWelling.com is hosted on WordPress. StartupsForTheRestOfUs.com is hosted on WordPress. I've always liked WordPress, yeah.
Yeah, you do. I've been nasty, don't I? But there we go. That's me, isn't it? Let's talk about AOS. So I think we covered the broader subject. So are there, let's go a little bit more focused. Are there any kind of AI? Because it's made an enormous difference to me, AI, because of my dyslexia, Rob. And I utilize a lot of AI almost every day, and it's made an enormous difference to my life. I just wish that this technology had been there like 10, 15 years ago. Are there any AI, particular AI tools or services that you've been using on a regular basis for yourself and for your company, Rob?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I use ChatGPT a few times a week. I've had to name three books. Take it easy, Kurt. I've had to name three books in the last 12 months, 15 months, and I love brainstorming with ChatGPT. And then internally, we use, Pod Squeeze, I believe it's called, for podcast production. We upload episode, we get a transcript, we get show notes, a draft of show notes with timestamps, and a bunch of other stuff. I don't even remember what, because my team does it, but they get a bunch of assets that we have to comb through it, you know, but it's like having a virtual assistant do it, basically. It gets us a really good first draft. And then I also use PodScan, which is Arvid Kahl's thing, which is like Google Alerts for podcasts. So I can type in my name, you know, and the name of my book and Microcom at Tiny Seed. And every day, PodScan.fm, I believe it is, downloads every podcast episode, every new one, and it transcribes them and it searches for those terms. And then it alerts you, someone mentioned your name on this podcast yesterday. It's a pretty cool tool. So yeah, I think AI is here to stay, and I think it's a great, I don't think it's going to take over programming. I think there will always need developers. It'll just make us more...
Well, I think it's a bit like the AI and SEO. Nobody really knows, do they?
Yeah, they don't.
I think... have you got another 10 minutes, or do we have to wrap it up now?
I do. I have a lunch appointment. I do need to wrap it up.
Right, that's understandable. So, Rob, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and some of your great ideas, Rob?
Thank you. RobWalling.com might be the easiest way to see everything. Frankly, if folks like watching stuff on YouTube, you can go to the MicroConf YouTube channel. And that's the other place I put out a video there every other week. And of course, podcast, startupsfortherestofus.com.
It's a fantastic podcast. I've learned so much from it, Rob. Thank you for being so diligent about producing it every week almost. It's been a great discussion. Rob's a friend of the show. Hopefully he sees me as a personal friend. We have met a couple of times. Hopefully we might meet up next year. And hopefully he'll come back next, probably the beginning of next year or something, because we're entering the last quarter of this year. Where has it gone? It's been a great discussion. If you want to support the show, just share this with everybody you know. And we'll be back next week with another great interview. We'll see you soon, folks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also, to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.